Welcome back, everyone, to the latest episode of the Blues on Parade podcast, where all we do is talk Chelsea and talk shit about everyone else. And today we're going to be holding true to our famed motto, because Chelsea finally decided to win a match, which is nice. So Chelsea defeats Sheffield United at home 2-0, and they spoil Chris Wilder's, I don't even know if you want to call it a manager bump or whatever you want to say about it, but yeah, they're the worst team in the league, and we only managed to beat them 2-0. So we're going to try and shed some positivity about that victory, and here to join me to do that is my trusty co-host, Andres. Andres, how you doing, man? 2-0. I mean, listen, it wasn't the greatest victory ever, but at least it's something. 3 points is 3 points.
I'm a better man when Chelsea wins on a Saturday morning. My weekend is a totally different weekend.
I would double down on that and say that we are better husbands when Chelsea win. That's definitely for sure.
I actually had to like... So we watched the first half real quick. Let me paint you a picture, because you say better husbands and then I like erupted. So watching the first half, wife is sitting next to me. Nothing happens, of course. Second half, I'm watching the game. It's looking like we're about to score. And she throws our dog's toy onto my lap. Junie, our dog, sprints across the living room, jumps on my lap, blocks the TV, we score. And I literally just go, are you fucking kidding me? I just spent an hour of my day watching shit, and I just didn't even get to watch the goal. So I had to quickly apologize to her and let her know that it wasn't a her thing. It was more of a frustration with Chelsea thing that... Of course, that just happened to happen at that moment.
Well, for those of you that have been living under a rock and haven't caught on yet, we're in the United States. So, I mean, I'm in Los Angeles, so most of the kickoff times are like, what, 6 a.m., 4:30. We get the occasional 7 a.m. or the occasional 9:30, but generally speaking, it's super early before my wife wakes up. And the last couple weeks, my wife would wake up, she'd walk into the living room, and she'd want to crawl under the blanket with me. Because, you know, it's cold in the morning, whatever, you want to do like your morning cuddles, all that cheesy shit, right? When we're losing, she can't get within 5 feet of me. She knows that. Like, no physical contact. Like, I'm just irritated, I'm hot, my blood's boiling. You know, you could kind of put the picture together. But this week, Andres, she even pointed it out. She said, wow, you're so nice this morning. And I said, yeah? Look at the score. It was 2-0 at that point by the time she was awake. So immediately she put two and two together and just kind of rolled her eyes like, you know what? I should have seen this one come in. So I told her, I said, from now on, you just got to check the score before you walk out in the morning. That way you know what kind of energy you're going to be walking into. Because some mornings it might serve you best to just kind of stay in the bedroom until, you know, 15 or 20 minutes after the match. Let me get that cool down period. But anyways... I'm ranting too much about my marriage.
To basically, lesson for all the wives out there, download FopMob and get notifications on the Chelsea exactly. matches, and you will know the mood of your husband or significant other.
Exactly. I downloaded ESPN on my wife's phone, and I actually tagged Chelsea and the Lakers as the two favorite teams, so she knows every single time when there's a Laker game, and she knows every single time when there's a Chelsea game. So it's definitely helped our communication skills. Anyways, let's get into it, man. I mean, Chelsea beating Sheffield 2-0. Just going through the starting 11 really quick. Petrovic making his full debut for Chelsea. So I know he came on as a sub, but this is the first time he started a Premier League match. And didn't really have anything to do. Kept a clean sheet, so good on him. Back four, all center backs. Axel de Sassi on the right. Thiago Silva and Badia Shiel in the middle. Levi Kobo out on the left. Enzo, actually, interestingly enough, being dropped for this match. A lot of people speculating. I personally think it's for rotational purposes. Andres, you could touch on that in a bit. But Caicedo and Gallagher starting as the double pivots. Midfield, the three in front of Caicedo and Gallagher. You had Cole Palmer starting at the 10, as we have been crying out for the last couple weeks. Sterling on the right. Mudryk returning on the left after a pretty decent performance in the last match. Nico Jackson up top. So... let's talk about it. Enzo Fernandez, Andres, I know me and you are on the same page with this, so why don't you explain to our lovely listeners our logic as to why he was quote-unquote dropped from the team this week.
He is a human being who has played every single minute possible of football since joining Chelsea. And previous to joining Chelsea, he also was part of that, you know, Argentinian winning, World Cup winning squad, where he also played a lot of minutes. So, yes, he had an offseason, which he had to cut short to come join us again in the U.S. So, therefore, Enzo Fernandez deserved a break.
Mm-hmm. Nothing more, nothing less.
Wild that our best player, technically speaking, has to get a break and catch his breath once. Wow. Wild. Absolutely crazy.
I want to talk about Petrovic for a second. I mean, I know he didn't have much work to do, but he made his full debut, so we got to give him some props there. Kept the clean sheet. Seemed to be, you know, pretty vocal in terms of communication with the back line on set pieces, I noticed specifically. He did make one save that was actually going wide, but I thought he did really well just to show reaction time and, you know, obviously length. He has a pretty big wingspan, which I didn't notice at first glance, because he's not as tall as Sanchez. And I actually did a little bit of research during the match, and, you know, Robert Sanchez is 6'7". Like, I don't think goalkeepers get much bigger than that. I know Courtois was around 6'6", 6'7", also. But Petrovic is on a small, not on the smaller side, but definitely smaller than Sanchez. He's at 6'4". So physically...
Still, wasn't Peter Cech 6'4"?
Something like that. Yeah, and Cech was a big boy. I think short for a goalkeeper is, like, similar to Kepa's size. I think Kepa was like 6 feet, barely 6 feet.
Yeah.
So, like, to me, that's short. But 6'4 is probably the, I don't want to say average height, but I think that's like the ideal height for a goalkeeper. If you're taller, yeah, even Cech, better.
Cech was 6'5. So, I mean, 6'5", give or take. He's in the ballpark.
But one thing I noticed about Petrovic, Andres, because we can't really talk about the saves, because, like I said, the only shot he really got fingertips on was already going wide. And we could talk about the reaction time and whatnot, but I actually liked him in possession. He plays the ball much quicker than Robert Sanchez.
He's everything's fixed. He's a solution. We're going to win the rest of our matches. It's Petrovic. That was it. We just had to change goalkeepers.
Well, listen.
No, I think he was good.
I think the baseline for Petrovic, and it's very easy. I think it's going to be pretty easy for him to win that number one spot, as long as he doesn't make three catastrophic mistakes a game like Robert Sanchez does with the ball at his feet.
He didn't kick it blatantly out of bounds or to the other team, so that's cool. Kept a clean sheet, that's cool. 100% save percentage, pretty cool.
Yeah, it's something. It's something. I mean, to Robert Sanchez's credit, he's a great shot stopper. I don't take anything away from, like, his actual ability to keep the ball out of the net. It's just that, dude, I don't know what this guy thinks in possession. He takes heavy touches. He doesn't open up his hips to the rest of the pitch, and it allows the defenders to close down on him. With Petrovic, I think he was obviously directed to play one and two touch, but it looked like he was actually going out of his way to make sure that the ball was getting released quickly, so we could kind of continue our run of play. And I think this would have been more evident or highlighted to the casual viewer if we were actually playing with natural fullbacks, because I think our ball progression would have benefited a lot from that. But the fact that we played two center backs at fullback again just meant that, you know, Petrovic would get the ball out from his feet and receive it back 5 seconds later, because the next pass is obviously going to be a back pass from Colwill or De Sassi.
Yeah, just one last thing on Petrovic. Petrovic. That's all you gotta know.
Yeah, that's all
if
that matters.
If you slur Petrovic, it's there. I'm just saying.
So, I mean, listen, the first half, it was, I called it flaccid in our group chat. It really felt that way.
Boring.
Like we could not get it. We could not get it up for this first half. And, you know, Conor Gallagher pretty much created the only opportunity in that half. And if you were watching, you would have noticed that it came off of him winning possession off of a Sheffield midfielder and then, you know, having a pop at goal, which was a decent attempt, actually. But outside of that, really nothing. Nico Jackson doing the usual. He thinks he's a midfielder. Cole Palmer really couldn't do much at the number 10 role. I think that's partly due to Jackson dropping so deep and kind of occupying his spaces so much. And then also on the flip side, there was nobody making forward runs. You know, the off-ball movement for Mudryk and Sterling was non-existent. A bunch of confounding factors for that. But otherwise, you know, we were defensively solid. We won possession back rather quickly. We didn't really allow Sheffield any opportunities on the counter, which we've been susceptible to in the last couple matches. But really doesn't mean anything if we're going to be stale in attack. So second half comes in. Sterling
no subs, which was surprising at the time. Yeah, no exactly. Subs. We were not happy about that.
Well, what subs would you have made at the half if you were in Pochettino's shoes? Let's say, you know, without knowing how the second half turned out.
Yeah, I mean, fullbacks. I would have played fullbacks. I would have probably removed, because of experience, probably removed Mudryk at Enzo, at least, like that, or add, not De Sassi. Excuse me. Remove De Sassi, add Gusto, because one thing in the first half that was aching my brain was De Sassi overlapping Sterling and then thinking that he was a small, agile fullback and just losing the ball over and over and over again. Just trying to dribble and by their corner flag. I really don't know what he was trying to do. I think, let's see, he was 1-for-4 in tackles. I'm trying to find it because I feel like he tried dribbling multiple guys. It says here that, dispossessed 3 times. I can bet you all 3 times were in that front third. I just couldn't do it. Couldn't do it.
Yeah, it seemed like, you know, he gets kind of excited. And we saw Badiashile do this a couple times from the center back position where he would kind of step up into the midfield. He'd make a decent run, lay the ball off, and then somebody would lose it, obviously. But with De Sassi, it just seemed like he would beat that first man. And then he'd have like his little Rudiger moment where he would try to beat a second and a third and then go after the same guy again and change and, you know, stop and go. It's just, I don't want to sit here and just kind of blame, you know, him and Colwill for the poor, you know, ball progression, especially, you know, in the middle and final third. But what exactly is Pochettino seeing from De Sassi or from Colwill that Ian Mattson or Gusto can't do? Because let's just be real with ourselves, Andres. Stylistically, Gusto and Mattson are identical to the first choice Reece James and Chilwell. Like, Ian Mattson is basically a Chilwell regen. He's a little bit smaller, but he has great
better on the
product.
Dribble, probably.
Yeah, maybe a little bit better on the dribble. More of like a natural midfield player than Colwill, Chilwell is. Like, you know, in those positions, I feel like he'd be a little bit more comfortable. But my point being, if you have Mattson playing out there and you plan on playing a certain way with Chilwell, which Pochettino, I mean, he named him vice captain, so that should say something. You know, Mattson has an ability to overlap like Chilwell. He can probably play passes like Chilwell. Half decent crossing the ball. We know he's a good finisher because he had a lot of goals for Burnley, and especially in the preseason, we saw a glimpse of that. And then you flip the coin to Malo Gusto. Yeah, he's not as big or burly as Reece James and maybe not as physically imposing, especially in the 1v1 defending department, but the dude overlaps. He's very comfortable on the ball. He doesn't give away possession. Again, great at playing those early crosses. We saw him get 2 assists in the same match earlier this season, so I just don't get the logic of playing these center backs there if you know when your first choices are healthy. Like, it doesn't make sense to me. I mean, can you kind of break it down? I mean, what do you think Poch is seeing, or are you kind of on the same page as me?
I mean, I'd like to see him be more brave. It's clear to me that it's a height thing. I mean, we, outside of our back five, we don't really have like a towering presence. Our next tallest guys is Palmer, I think, at 6'1", maybe Jackson as well. But they're so far from the middle of the pitch that, you know, when you play a team like Sheffield, who, let's be real, their plan was probably over the top balls, which we completely handled every single time. I'd argue that while it didn't look good in the attack, at least our aerial duels, I think we won over 50% of the 50, 60. I'm trying to see 60. And then De Sassi, 100. So they did their part. If the job was to just be like, okay, nobody's going to go over us, which is probably the only thing Sheffield could have done, it worked, but at the same time, I don't think that this should be the standard. And I think that's what you're getting at. I don't think we should be playing four center backs all at the same time and expect them to do a fullback's job. It's almost like you have all these players and you're asking them to do things that they're not going to succeed at. And then because you're asking them to do things they're not going to succeed at, then the things that they're good at are not going to happen because they're now focused on doing other things. And I think that's kind of been the story of our season with our group. And the reasons you see something like people complaining about Caicedo not having a good game or Enzo suddenly is not worth 100 mil, because I think that's been sort of, I think last week, it either you asked me or Sam asked me, like, what is Podgeball? And I feel like that is currently what kind of is killing me in the head, is that the only thing I can think of is that Podge is forcing guys to do things they're not going to excel at to find solutions, and everyone is worse off for it.
Yeah.
Like I said, today, if the strategy was like, okay, these guys are not going to give me anything forward, but nobody's going to go over us or beat us with a header, which has been a constant the past couple of weeks.
Yeah, that far post, that blind run far post.
Right. Then it worked out. Mind you, there were a couple of scary moments where it did go across our goal.
Mm-hmm.
Not in the air, but across our goal regardless. And sure, I think they had 0.19 XG in the first half, but how much does that matter if you're giving even a worse offensive performance?
Yeah.
So that first half made that decision a lot shittier in my mind. Like, it just felt like there was no answer and no real creativity. Like, we were complaining, like, is there any coaching going on? But then second half, there was a change. And It was night and day. It was simply just putting Sterling in the middle and Palmer out wide.
Yeah.
And
it looked like, it started to cut you off, but it looked like Sterling didn't replicate Palmer's role. He was playing up top next to Nico.
I was going to say it was a 4-4-2. I feel like people are saying, oh, it's Sterling at the 10, Sterling at 10. To me, it was legitimately a 4-4-2, like where I would say Sterling had more of a freedom to like help wide, and Nico was told to stay the fuck in the middle for once.
Yeah.
Because the first goal came from Palmer drifting from outside in to inside to get open, and then Sterling going from inside to outside to get open.
Mm-hmm.
And then that sort of switch in motion allows Sterling to get wide for a cutback and Palmer in the box to finish it. But in the first half, that wasn't available because Palmer's trying to find pockets of space, coming all the way back to the defense to get the ball. Sterling is static as well. So if Sterling wants to be static, you might be, well, it's not even static. Sorry, I'm like, as I'm speaking, I'm correcting myself. But Sterling, I just don't think is a factor in the buildup ever. I think he is a factor inside and around the box. Like, if you think about his good games this season, he's not creating things that allow, you know, the two moves later in the chessboard to get checkmate. Like, he is the final piece that gets the checkmate, to say that. Like, I don't know how else to say it. Like Palmer is more of the orchestrator, and Sterling is the beneficiary of it. And so making that switch allows Palmer to go back to playmaking and Sterling to just be in the end product of things. So I think that was just huge, because there was, Mudryk was getting space and he was doing the initial part right, and then the maturity kind of kicks in, showing that shot from 40 yards out, that sort of thing. But then having Palmer on the right, he can go inside with his dribbling. He can go back outside because he's got a little bit of that City DNA with the cutbacks kind of thing, and he's good enough with his right foot to where he's comfortable going either way. Something that I feel like the rest of our attackers don't have. Sterling is going to think, go inside, get towards goal at all times. Mudryk is just speed, 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 speed. And then Nico is kind of like
headless chicken.
Well, I'll get to him in a second, but it's just, he needs a lot more of a shorter leash overall, I feel, in terms of like what his freedom, like what his free thinking should do. But my point is that change, the systemic patterns, the movements, it was night and day. The first half, there was nothing going on. Second half, I felt like every time we had the ball, there was a game plan. There's a way to get forward and how to attack. And I think the two goals in the second half should have been a lot more. Mm-hmm. That's how I came out off of that half.
Yeah, I think, you know, also to just to kind of double down and brag a little bit. I mean, we were advocating for Palmer to play at the 10, and I know him switching out wide right, you know, is taking him out of that position that we've been begging him to play in. But look at the kind of goal he scored. That's a number 10's goal. If you watch it back, yeah, he actually is the one that plays the ball out to Sterling and makes, yep, the run into the box. So it's kind of like a 1-2. It was just really well orchestrated from Cole Palmer. The other thing I wanted to point out was, if Sterling wasn't the guy to drift out to the right and switch spots with Cole Palmer, I noticed that Connor Gallagher was actually drifting out wide right in some of our build-up play as well, which, you know, I mean, you have your opinions on it, but that's clearly a tactic that's been coached into him, you know,
over the course of this season. We've done it multiple times before.
Exactly. And that's what I was going to get at, is like, we've seen this before and it's worked, you know, and at least in this match, it kind of worked. I think against deep blocks, you can get away with something like that. But once you get again, once you start playing teams like, dare I say it, even Everton, who do have that counterattacking threat, and that, you know, that they have the players that could play that incisive pass and kind of bypass the midfield if Conor Gallagher does vacate it. I think it's one of those situations that's kind of touch and go. Like, you got to kind of see how the match is going. The situational awareness of the manager comes into play. And then if we are playing against a really low block, sure, great, that's going to work. But if we're playing against a team that has that counterattacking speed, or that, or maybe even has that one playmaker in the middle that, you know, you do need to double up on and make sure that you close down the spaces with, then at that point, you tell Conor Gallagher to stay back. But it's just something I wanted to point out, was that, you know, he was drifting out wide right if Cole Palmer wasn't the guy to do it, or yeah, if Cole Palmer vacated that space, if Sterling didn't occupy it, it was definitely Conor Gallagher. And I actually saw that maybe three or four times in the second half. And one of the times we actually almost found a final ball. But, you know, obviously the play got broken down because we're incapable of playing a final ball. But, you know, listen, I'm happy that we called out Poch last pod about, you know, the lack of creativity, the lack of making these necessary changes during the match. You know, the in-game management just kind of seemed to be not there, really. Like, I think he was giving Chelsea fans, at least in the beginning of the season, the impression that he was stubborn in his approaches with things. But it was good to see that we switched to a 4-4-2. I mean, I was even calling at one point in my head, I'm thinking, you know what, let's just throw Broja up there with Nico and just let them just, like let Broja toss people around. You know, let Nico occupy the spaces he wants to occupy and just kind of see what happens, because Broja is more of your typical hard-nosed, ball-retaining number nine than Nico is, right? So I think, yeah, maybe they could have some decent chemistry playing off of one another. But the other reason why I was happy with this 4-4-2 in general is because when Nkunku comes back, I mean, we're going to need his end product. Like, I think that's very clear. Early on in the season, we're like, okay, maybe he could be that creator. You know, maybe he can be, maybe he can kind of be the sidekick to whoever our primary goal scorer is. I think now at this point, he is our primary goal scorer when he does come into the team. And maybe showing this 4-4-2 this match might pay dividends in the future if we could get, you know, maybe an Nkunku or Nico partnership, or an Nkunku and Broja, or Nkunku and Sterling, Nkunku and Palmer even.
Which I'd argue that was almost what it felt like during the preseason, mm-hmm, right? Like those two guys playing very central, very close to each other, almost like
Nkunku and Nico you're referring to, yeah.
Yeah, and Nkunku, Nico, Mata, Nico, Chukwuemeka, Nico, whoever you want to be the mix of those three, even Cassidy and, yeah, whoever else was there. Like, it was very much a shadow striker, not a Juan Mata 10.
Exactly.
So maybe that's our slow transition back towards something like that. Obviously, no fullbacks in play this time around. But I do think that change was extremely important. And we'll see. I mean, it's going to be interesting because we've been playing almost like a strict midfield three. Mm-hmm. And I think we'll probably go right back to it. How do you make that midfield three look like a 4-4-2? I mean, you do what you just said, right? We allow Connor to drift wide when
Cole Palmer comes inside. Like, he's got enough of an engine to do that. The other thing I wanted to point out that I noticed in this game is that our sort of blocks of lines were a lot closer to each other. We had been talking about someone like Caicedo being the only guy you see on the TV screen when watching a match. And, I mean, he had arguably one of his best games of the season today or during this match, which is no surprise when he actually has support to let him essentially look the part, which is what I've been arguing all season. I thought he was easily the man of the match. I don't think he put a single foot wrong. I mean, 97 of 110 passes, 2 for 2 in his dribbles. I just thought he was everywhere. 11 recoveries, 6 duels won. I mean, you name 11
recoveries is mad.
Yeah, especially for a team that's not trying to possess the ball.
Exactly. Like, that means every single time they'd get possession, Caicedo was there to take it off of them. I mean, really quickly, Andres, Bone Daddy, a.k.a. Bone Daddy Deluxe, a.k.a. the Czar of the Ultras, Ron, he tweeted at us. He actually said he posted a Caicedo and Badman appreciation post. He said, dudes played pretty flawlessly and don't get the credit they deserve. I mean, I do want to dive into Caicedo a little bit more because we kind of had this debate during the match in our Discord chat where I actually would argue that Caicedo is probably the most underappreciated of these new signings that have come into the club. Considering that he's playing in a midfield that's constantly chopping and changing, a midfield that's very inconsistent week in and week out, I think we could look at him as one of those guys that you kind of know what you're going to get every single time he steps out onto the pitch. He's going to be clean in possession. You know, he's going to be a dog defensively. You know, he's going to cover a lot of ground on the pitch. He's going to be physical, even though he's a little bit smaller. And a couple times in this match, and I want to see this more, and I'm curious to see what you think about it. But we even saw him overlap on the right-hand side a couple times in the second half and try to play a couple cutbacks. And I think in 1v1 situations, he's pretty fucking good with the ball at his feet.
No, he is agile. He's really, like, good about not losing the ball on the dribble. Mm-hmm. Before I lose my train of thought, I also want to say that in the second half, we talked, you mentioned all the things we've said about Poss before, lack of changing things and stuff. But I think I came to like, I don't want to say epiphany, but like maybe like a this is what we are kind of moment where we are like the equivalent of a kids team, like metaphorically speaking, where like the way kids work is that if things are going well for them, everything's going to go well. And everyone's going to start looking good because there's confidence, because things are clicking. So then everyone looks amazing. Like, Enzo played like 5 minutes, but I swear in those 5 minutes, he had like 6 individual moments of like flair and like trying something that we haven't seen him do in a while. Like, he was doing Travellas left and right. Like, you talked about Caicedo overlapping and dribbling people. Like, those things, we haven't seen that, like, fun factor. I don't know how else to say it. Like, yeah, I don't know what the word is outside of that. Exactly.
That's the word. Yeah.
That's the word I'm thinking of. And have we seen that sort of moment in time this season? I'd say, like, there's moments of brilliance. Like I've said before, like, we've seen the 10 pass build outs and things like that. But in this match, after the goals came and the goals should have kept coming, you saw the team. Like, the machine was working, every cog, every piece, and then there was a little bit of brilliance flashes here and there. So that's what our season's going to be. Like, that's basically what I'm getting at. If things go our way, like, it'll be fun for that game. If it's a hard game where, like, we're not finding solutions or we get scored on first, then we know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
But to go back to... To Body of Shield. I mean, he's back. Like, that is Body of Shield. That is who we saw in the spring. That is who made Graham Potter look like a good coach for a while. Like, he was so good, so smooth, so unfazed by what was happening around him. Freaking Scorpion kicked a ball with a man, like, wrestling him to settle it at one point. Mm-hmm. Like, actually settled the ball doing a Scorpion. And then you mentioned he dribbled past a few guys. There was moments where even within our own box, it felt like everyone around him was moving in slow motion. Like, he received it, he turned, took a couple steps, then found an easy pass out. It was crazy. It was crazy. And people were so quick to dismiss him, like, try to compete, like, put a rivalry between him and Colwell or whatever, like, DeSasi, or not DeSasi, Body of Shields, screwed, blah, blah, blah. But he's back, dude. Like, he is, he's arguably, like, he's going to be the, he's going to be the rock, I feel like. Like, he's always going to be, like, you're going to let your Thiago Silva do the ball over the top. That's pretty. Or Levi Colwell, if he ever gets to play center back again, to do those long piercing passes. Like, that's what's going to make them get the highlight play. But they'll be allowed to make the highlight play because Body of Shield will be next to them. That's how I see it. Just, I'm just glad that he's back.
Yeah, and I think he's our best center back at the moment. I think your point about Colwell playing left back, that's going to be a stalwart between now and the end of February, because Cucurella is now out until then. So for those of you that didn't know, Cucurella is out till February. The club confirmed it. He confirmed it. Everything's posted on his Instagram if you want to refer to it. So that's probably a situation that's going to stay the same. I fully expect Ian Motson to find a move in January. I think if you're looking at his best, if he's looking at his own best interests and being selfish, which he should be, he's a young footballer.
Yeah.
He should be itching for a move and bugging his agent to find another club that's interested in him.
Speaking of, and again, speaking of random left back Chelsea guys that are leaving and whatnot, there is that whole theory that Lewis Hall might end up coming back.
Yeah, he's not playing at all, is he?
He's not getting minutes. They're bounced out of Europe. Like, they're trying to get it, stay in top four. Like, there's not been enough minutes to activate the obligation to buy.
He's great on the ball. He's good at overlapping. He can provide.
If you don't want him overlapping, he can invert for you from the left back position. He is definitely comfortable in position. It's just crazy that in a weird, twisted way, like, ownership's forcing of the young guys out for, like, straight cash or whatever. In a weird way, the gods and then the footballing gods are like, wait, we can throw both of them a solid here. Maybe Lewis Hall gets minutes and Chelsea improves for the better. You never know. I just think it's funny that that's a true possibility right now.
Yeah, and it's funny, or coincidental, actually, because the person that's holding Lewis Hall back from playing is a former Chelsea youth product himself in Livramento. I know he's been playing left back for Newcastle, and dude, that kid is special. Just overall as a footballer, I think if he's not already, he's going to be one of the best fullbacks in the Premier League. He just does everything so well. I'm a big fanboy of his. But yeah, I mean, let's kind of get right back into it with the second half here. Nkunku doesn't come on.
Yeah.
I know we're frustrated at that. I was frustrated at that. I think you play him even the last 5 minutes. Let him get two or three touches on the ball. Let the home fans cheer him onto the pitch. Let him feel welcome. You know, give the team a little bit of positive, like a positive boost. You know, you got one of your proven European guys coming into the side against a last place team. Maybe he gets, you know, a shot on target or a really close call, almost scores a goal. Maybe he does get a goal. Yeah. Why not play him? And I know Poch said after the match, oh, well, you know, we didn't want to risk him and this and that. Then don't put him on the fucking bench.
Yeah, I'm at the point where this is like that. Have you ever seen the Venn diagram where it's like, if A happens, it's like a circle. It's not a Venn diagram. Excuse me. It's like a circular, like a loop. And it's like, if this, then this. And then it goes back. So it's like, Nkunku is recovering from injury. So he can't start a game. And he can't get minutes because he's recovering from injury. So it just stays. How do you break the cycle? He has to play somewhere, right? Because now comes the Newcastle match and you can't start him because he's not match fit yet. How do you get match fit? By getting minutes. Why isn't he getting minutes? Like, I don't care that we were winning 2-0. Like, if anything, I just mentioned how everyone was looking great. Imagine, you know, Poch was talking about like not putting him in a position of extreme pressure. The game was done. There was no pressure.
Yeah,
I said Enzo was doing Travellas for fun, and Caicedo decided to go crazy and go way past everyone moving forward. Like, this was the time.
I would argue there's more pressure on Pochettino to just sub him on than there would be if Nkunku was to come on.
Yeah, he could have literally beat one defender and everyone would have said it was a 10-10 performance. That's all he would need to do. Control the ball and then pass the ball. And we would have been like, boom, wow, this guy, he's our best player. Wow, and Nkunku's back. It would have just been the cherry on top. In what could have, what was a good result, this could have been like, it's like we did it with Reese. We played Reese like 2 seconds a couple times before he got back. Obviously, he's hurt again, but like,
didn't we do that with Broja? I think we played Broja for like the last 7 or 8 minutes of a game, his first match back.
Yeah, against Aston Villa. Yeah. And then he eventually ended up starting 2 games later. So like now, Nkunku's going to be available for Newcastle? Bullshit. Like, if you're telling me you don't want pressure, don't put him into a position where he's going to come on probably off the bench in a must-win match. Like, this could have been that moment. Too.
I mean, I don't know. Is that match home or away?
I can check.
Yeah, I'm curious. Because that would be like a, you know.
It's home.
Obviously. Yeah. Oh, it is at home. Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, that was annoying.
Frustrating, man. Very frustrating.
Like Gusto. Malagusto was also cleared for the first time for this match, and he played. Like, he played a few minutes, and that's fine. He came on in like the 88th, I think, something like that. I don't even know if he touched the ball, to be completely honest. But that could have been him. Just go out there. Your cleats are on. Run around a little bit.
Yeah. Why not? I mean, I was a little bit frustrated at it. Obviously, it's not the end of the world. And sure, you know, he's going to play again in the future. But like, you got to think of the mentality of the team and where they're at psychologically at the moment. Like, this is one of the few times this season where fans were actually comfortable watching a game. Like, we weren't sitting on the edge of our seat worried about conceding a stupid goal or, you know, dropping points or even being in a losing position. So bring them on. Like, it's only going to be a positive thing. And like, the other thing is, if you're Pochettino, you have to think of how the fans feel right now this season and how they're portraying the players. And if you bring on a guy like Nkunku, I think that's a guy that every single fan in Stamford Bridge is going to clap onto the pitch, because they're watching a bunch of kids just fuck around all season, where you got this guy who's just came back from injury, who's proven that he could put up double digits goals and assists multiple seasons in a row in one of Europe's top leagues. Like, it can only be a positive for us, I feel like. So,
yeah,
I don't want to harp on it too much, because, you know, he is going to play eventually. And even if he did play, it's not like we're going to sit here and criticize his performance. It's his first match. And I would just argue that, you know, maybe getting those touches, first touches in the Premier League, especially in a winning position at Stamford Bridge, there's really no way to look at it where it can turn out negatively, unless he, you know, tears his ACL again running out onto the pitch.
Right.
So just kind of moving on here into our Twitter questions. We did get one in from Trail Wolf. He asked, why do you think we tried for so long to play a narrow game against Sheffield? It was clear that as soon as we stretched the field all the way wide, we opened the game up so much more. I would argue that the center backs at fullback didn't really help in terms of creating that width that we need. And the other thing was, whenever our wingers got the ball, Mudryk or Sterling, especially in that first half, they're basically facing up against two defenders. So it's not putting them in a position where they can do what they do best, and that's running at defenders and just kind of taking guys on 1v1. If you look at Sterling's goal in the second half, 1v1 scenario, beats his guy with the first step, able to play a cross in. We didn't see that in the first half because there was no overlapping, there was no underlapping, there was just nothing. There was literally nothing coming from them. And I'm really curious to see what the pass chart shows for the first half in terms of the forward passes that Disasi and Colwo played to their respective wingers in Mudryk and Sterling. But that's just kind of my take on it, Andres. You know, I think Poch maybe assumed that it would have been easier to break Sheffield down than it actually was. And, you know, the center back, fullback thing, just, it doesn't put our wingers in a position to thrive in those areas of the pitch.
Yeah, I just think like that's what I was talking about, like where you know what Raheem Sterling and Mudryk want to do, right? And that's to get from, they receive wide, but they'll go straight inside. There's no like, extra thought process of what they want to do, or like, oh, maybe this time he's going to go outside to cross it. Like, did Mudryk get into crossing positions a couple of times early on? Sure, within the first 10 minutes. And this is where I go back to the whole, like, we are a youth team, right? When it didn't work, mm-hmm. what did Mudryk default back to? I'll beat the first guy, and then I'm going to start going inside. Because I'm going to pick up speed, and something's going to happen. And it didn't, obviously. But, yeah, I think there was the slow buildup. It doesn't help. And then, again, I think there was too much congestion in our two central guys, like between Nico and Cole Palmer. They were just kind of stepping on each other's toes, which then allows just one player to defend two guys. And so, like you mentioned, then there's that overload in the wide areas for our wingers to try to deal with by happenstance. Like, I don't know if it's like, I don't think that was a strategy that Sheffield was doing by any means. So, to me, I think it was just the frustration kicks in about minute 12, and we default to like the one trick pony sort of way. Again, Mudryk is at a point where he's not going to be the guy that's going to, like, Palmer can grab the game by the scruff of the neck and take us to victory. Mm-hmm. Mudryk isn't, and when the first half is the way the first half was, that's kind of what we saw, right? He nutmegs a guy. He beats the first man. But then the next portion, nothing is happening still, and it doesn't look as good. Nobody, you mentioned, the fullback isn't overlapping. And then Palmer and Nico weren't really making the kind of run that Sterling was making off the ball when he was playing central. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, like Cole Palmer can't be asking for it in the middle to feet while Nico's also in the middle asking for it to feet, while Caicedo and Gallagher are also in the middle asking for it to feet. There needs to be more movement. And I don't think that was a strategic thing on Poch's part. Again, I think that when frustration hits for this team, there is no thinking on the spot. There is no, let me brainstorm a solution. Let me think one step further. They just sort of break down.
Play their own games.
Yeah, like, this is what I'm good at, so I'm only going to do this. Like, this is my specialty, so I'm only going to do this. So, yeah, we always gave him shit. This time, Poch got it right, coached it up at halftime, and we were for the better. But, yeah, I don't think that was, like, the strategy to attack Sheffield down the middle. I think nobody wants to attack Sheffield down the middle.
Yeah, I mean, you know they're going to pack 11, 10 guys in the box and, you know, one just outside. So I think that was a given kind of going into this match. And I think that's part of the reason why Pochettino decided, hey, maybe this is a good chance to drop Enzo because I can add that third attacker, you know, in the three right behind Nico. And that's exactly what he did. And, you know, obviously it didn't pay off right away, but a couple tactical changes later and it does. So that's always a good thing. Human Capital Department reached out to us again. He asked, is encouraging result, but still a work in progress. What do you see as priorities in the transfer window, and who should we release? He gives an example, Armando Broja.
When he says release, I'm sure he means like cash on, we're not going to let anyone
transfer,
go on.
Transfer, yeah. Find a move, loan, whatever it might be. So, I mean, let's kind of talk about the first part of the question first. What do you see as priorities in a transfer window? And I mean, I'll just put this out there. I think we need a center forward. I really, really do. I think we need a guy that knows how to score fucking goals.
And it has to happen, because even if people are dreaming Osimhen can happen in January, like, you guys do realize that he would be gone for a month, just like Broja. Or not Broja, excuse me, just like Jackson, because they're African players who have a tournament mid-season. Mm-hmm. So Do I know who the center forward we should go after is? No clue. I couldn't tell you. I honestly don't know. No idea whatsoever who we could go out there and get right now.
This kind of makes Vlahovic look like we're the ones left with egg on our faces.
He's hurt.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
He scored a couple this season for Juve.
He started the season looking good, but he's hurt.
Yeah. So maybe that's not an option anymore.
Yeah. I was thinking, like, there was something I read this week where I believe, like, Roma is interested in making Lukaku a permanent player.
gonna bring
but
Tammy
then there's
back.
Also, yeah, like that was the one like outside the box way of thinking. I mean, you know, there is the possibility also that Lukaku could go to Saudi in the summer. That was the other thing I read. So it's like, okay, what do you prioritize? Cashing in finally for Lukaku, or giving somebody a bit of a discount in return? You get a Premier League proven striker in a way.
I would play devil's advocate. Listen,
he scored a lot for us.
When he was here, I was the leader of hashtag Team Tammy, right? I'll be the first one to put my hand up. But I do think that move, if it was to happen, comes with a pretty significant amount of risk that we can't really afford to take. Like, if we fail, or let's say if our January signing, whatever it might be, if we make one even, fails, it would be catastrophic to this season. Like, it would.
Yeah.
It would definitely mean that, you know, we obviously got to go back into the window the next summer and find a replacement for that shit player, because he's not. And not saying Tammy's shit, but I want to go after the guy that, similar to the Ilkay of Nkunku, that scored double figure goals in Europe for multiple seasons running. Like, you know, if you go around Europe and mention Christopher Nkunku's name to all of the top clubs, I'm sure they'd all have good things to say about him on their scouting report.
Yeah.
If you go to all the top clubs in Europe and talk about Osimhen, it'd be the same, right? Vlahovic, maybe, you know, I'd say maybe not as strong of an argument as the other two I mentioned. But if you do that with Tammy, I think there's a lot of people on the fence. And I do think, and this is no, you know, incitement on Tammy, but I do think he's a mid-table center forward. And I know we're mid-table now, and it sounds stupid with me saying that, but we're not planning on being there long. So I do think we need that next-level striker that's going to either complement or help Nkunku in the future with, you know, shouldering all the goal scoring. Because I think if you look at the rest of our attack, I've come to terms with it. I still rate Mudryk very highly. But I think there's another 12 to 18 months where he does need to develop. Like, I don't think we're going to see that player that he could become anytime soon. Yeah. I think Raheem Sterling, yeah, he got the assist. Outside of that, disappointing performance again. You can't rely on him. That's the bottom line. Madueke,
he might be gone. You're talking about players that might get released. He might be gone.
Yeah, I think, yeah. I mean, moving to the second part of the question, I was actually going to mention Madueke as one of them, because he's still a guy that we can maybe recoup most of, if not all of, our investment on. You know, if we find a team that's willing to pay 20, 30 million for him. But, you know, just look at the rest of our attack and you tell me, you know, which guys we're really high on. Outside of Mudryk, I really don't see anything. So
I just think, like, by now, like, there's something's got to give, right? Like, he's obviously not taking in the coaching, something like that. Like, the Matson one, I think Poch has a bit of a height boner. I don't know how else to say it, where Matson is just so short. And that was something that, like, I remember mentioning before Poch was even our manager. It's like, how often do you see a Premier League fullback be as short as Matson? And we just aren't a tall team. But... do you have any names for the striking position for January?
That's the problem I keep running into, because I'm seeing a lot of names of players that I've never fucking heard of before, and I want to stay away from them with a 10-yard pole.
The Lisbon, there's a Swedish striker for Lisbon right now who apparently is scoring a lot. He's the one that I'm seeing pop up, but then I don't remember what source it is, and I'm calling bullcrap. They're saying, like, his Lisbon is not going to look at offers under 85 million. It's like, he's not even. No, I don't know who this guy is.
Well, look how hard Lisbon was to negotiate for Bruno Fernandes from Manchester United's perspective. I mean, how long did that saga drag out?
Or like, two or three think windows. More recent, we were supposed to get Ugarte.
Yeah, yeah. Look
what
at that.
What happened there?
Exactly. And Ugarte is dog shit. And they still got 60 million for him somehow. I mean, we dodged a bullet there. Better that we got Caicedo. But outside of that, Andres, I really just don't see any other names. I think maybe we can overpay for a guy like an Ivan Toney. But even at that point, it's like, if you do bring in Ivan Toney, is that the kind of
so much about Arsenal though? Like, I feel like that's Arsenal's move this January.
Why wouldn't you though? I mean, if you go to Arsenal, you're probably going to win a Premier League title. You know, you're going to play Champions League. You're going to get a lot of minutes because Jesus and Trossard, like none of them have really, even Nketiah, they've never really nailed down that center forward position right as their own. So like, but outside of that, I mean, okay, let's say in a perfect world, we do get Ivan Toney. Is that the guy that's going to take us to the next level? Like, is that the guy that's going to sort of put up the Diego Costa, the Drogba? Like, is he going to put up those kind of numbers and be like the talisman player of this team? Like,
I just don't know if that's the goal. I think like it's adding a little bit, like kind of when we got Giroud. I think that's the true game plan. Like, okay, a little bit of a guy that's going to have a cool head whenever we're down a goal, or like, this like have a little bit more nuance to it. Like we've talked about it. Like we talked about how Nico should not be coming all the way to midfield against a well-coached low block. He needs to be fighting in the trenches kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Like I don't think it's going to be a marquee signing by any means. I can't remember who I saw point out, maybe like a Mateta from Palace, something like that, where it's like a big physical. I'm like, it's not exciting. It's not exciting, but I don't expect exciting signings this January. Like I don't. Yeah. We won't know if we've won. Like if we need to beat Newcastle Tuesday to just continue the dream of like Carabao Cup will get us somewhere. Like that can maybe help get somebody of a higher ilk, I guess. I don't know, man. It's tough.
I don't know either.
I don't think we get this guy. I don't think he's experienced, so I don't think he falls into what I'm preaching. But Thiago like
Jimenez.
No. I'm not a big Dutch league signings guy, I don't think. I think I've fallen out of that moment
in
time.
What are the odds our American owners buy a Mexican striker anyways?
I was going to say the guy from Luton, Adebayo. I don't know. I like him. The big giant dude. I like him. That's the guy that was coming to mind.
Would Luton really sell their season?
No.
Because that's the only guy that's put the ball in the back of the net for them. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's not happening.
I think a stopgap is preferred, at least in my perspective, too, because it's like,
Osimhen's the big fish, right? Like you're talking about the guy that's going to change. And like, I don't know if we spend 120 mil again in January. Like if we're going to do that, like you talk again, going back to the second part of the question, because we need to be not breaching FFP. You got Trevor Chalobah for about 25 mil, Motson for maybe 20 mil. So you're at about 45 mil at that point. Who else are you offloading? Broja, 15 mil. So, okay, 35, 15. We're now at 50 mil. Like, these are all academy guys. So, again, they're all whatever they call it in direct injection of cash. I think at this point, you preach that you're going to help Poch and you're going to work beside him to get him what he wants in the transfer. If you sell Conor Gallagher, I call bullshit on these owners even harder, because time and time again, Poch has preached Gallagher, his importance, his role, and to this match showed it again. You can rely on the guy. You do not take our most senior center mid off the table if you're looking for more experience. I'm hoping that's not the way to go.
Yeah, yeah. And apparently Poch is supposed to have more say in the transfer business. So it's like, if Poch is saying this in public multiple times, maybe you want to shut those rumors up. Extend the contract offer. Like, or even if you want to sell them, like, you know, long term, let's say you want to sell him, do what Napoli's doing with Osimhen. Re-sign him, pay him more money so he's happy to stay till the end of the season if need be, and then attach a release clause to him. You know, if teams are really interested, they'll pay the release clause. Otherwise, Poch is more than happy to find use for him. And out of anybody, that's probably the one player that I'm confident enough that's probably the one player that I'm confident in Poch to where he can get the most out of him. Like, it's clear. Poch is proven that Conor Gallagher is the guy that he could squeeze the most juice out of so far this season. So it's like, why not bring him back? But I don't know, Andres. I'm trying to like run down a list of Premier League clubs in my head and trying to think of like the strikers that maybe aren't getting minutes, or the guys that are like on the older end, that where there's like a young guy who's second choice right now. And I really just, I don't see like another Giroud situation, at least in the Premier League. I mean, maybe we'll have to expand a little bit, but to kind of liken the signing that we need, I think we need like a Joselu type signing, how Real Madrid signed him, right? Like, they brought him in because they know they're going to need a striker eventually. Their big fish is Haaland or Mbappe. They know they're not going to get either of them this year. So let's sign an experienced guy from the Spanish league that's proved that he could score goals, that's comfortable enough with the league to where he can just kind of step in, be a placeholder. Yeah, he's not going to set the world alight. He might frustrate fans, you know, every so often, but he's going to be a placeholder. He's just going to, he's going to do what he's going to do. You know what you're going to get from him. And at the end of the day, he's going to be productive. I think Joselu has like 6 goals for Real Madrid this season, which Nico has 8. So not far off.
All non-penalty goals, though. Just that is something to point out.
He probably could have had like 11 or 12 goals if he scored, you know, his Champions League tap-ins, but he's just incapable of doing that.
I do want to add also, I think left back, I mentioned Lewis Hall earlier. That's not experience. I think at this point, you're down. Like, you don't know how Chilwell's coming. I don't trust Chilwell's health. I don't trust Cucurella's ability. And Ian Motson's not trusted. So we are now looking again, in my book, for a backup left back with experience.
Mm-hmm.
Do I have a name in mind that, like, gets me excited? No. If I want to kill two birds with one stone, we were licked with Kyle Walker's Peters before.
Mm-hmm.
That's a safe bet.
Sure, he doesn't want to play in the championship much longer.
Yeah, I mean, again, we're a mid-table side right now, so we can't be over here talking like we can't sign a championship player. So that's kind of like the only name in, like, at the top of my head that I can think of. And I don't even know if our club is even looking that way. But
there's nothing wrong with signing a championship player. Callum Wilson was a championship player when Newcastle signed him. And look where he is now. I mean, he's keeping Isak out of the team pretty much. I have an interesting name that popped into my head for striker, and it's not on a script. I don't think I've ever even mentioned it before, but hear me out, okay? You want somebody that's experienced, somebody that's been through it, somebody that scored goals in big matches. Sebastian Allaire.
Okay, I actually had that moment in my head for a second. I don't know how much... I don't know if he starts at Dortmund. I don't know if Dortmund's...
He doesn't. I know they have Füllkrug up top.
That's right. They do have Füllkrug up top
now. Yeah, and he's a similar player to Allaire, so I don't think Allaire is getting in over him. But, you know, I know he... Again, it's terrible with the cancer diagnosis and all of that stuff. I mean, the guy's a fighter. He fought through it, thank God. But I know he hasn't hit the ground running since then. But maybe it's just a matter of him getting the regular first-team minutes. And it's a guy who's familiar with the Premier League. Granted, he didn't necessarily set it alight when he was at West Ham.
He was playing for David Moyes. Like, it's a stylistic thing.
Exactly. And what I was going to say is he was also playing not just under David Moyes, but he was playing for West Ham when they were pretty much a relegation side. let's be honest with ourselves.
Does he get a call-up to the Ivory Coast team? Because he did make himself Ivorian not too long ago. That's the one catch.
Yeah, I didn't think about that part. That's a good point.
Yeah.
But, I mean, again, it's the type of profile that you would want, right? And, like, and I think that would definitely help Poch's situation in terms of the height issue that he's having on defending set pieces. Like, Allaire's massive. He's, like, 6'4", 6'5". He's a big dude. He's great in the air. He's not going to drift into the midfield like Nico Jackson does. Like, he's very much a prototypical, like, hold-up striker, penalty box poacher, you know, loft, you know, crosses in, and he's going to get his forehead on a lot of them. Similar to, like, the way Olivier Giroud was. Like, he wasn't the most mobile center forward ever, but stylistically, it kind of worked out for us. Like, he was a great finisher. He was probably the best target man in the world for a stretch of time. Allaire, maybe not on the same level as Giroud, but potentially a really good signing. Like, now that the more I'm thinking about it, the more I'm coming around to it, even with the African, the AFCON thing, like, you can play in Nkunku at center forward for 5, 6, 7 games.
Yeah.
Not that big of a deal.
And I've been thinking, like, if we don't sign a center forward, you know, you run that 4-3-3 where it's Nkunku in the middle.
Yeah.
Again, I don't know if that's something Poch will try. I don't think it affects the whole defending height thing because he's going to play 3 to 4 center backs anyway. But yeah, I think, again, striker, we'll see what the options are. But for sure, left back. I think a fullback is a must at this point. You don't have Chilwell. You don't know when he's coming. There is no timeline on Chilwell. There's no Kukure until probably like early to mid-March because he has to recover and practice and yada, yada, yada. And we're going to sell Matheson. Like, he didn't play this weekend. Like, if there was a time to play him, it was against that low block of Sheffield, you know? Like,
yeah. I'm with you. I can't preach it enough.
We haven't seen him. Poch decide to be like, oh, I'll play a back three. Like, back three with wing backs.
Yeah, which
could have been also a reason to get him in. So, yeah, striker and left back are, I think, my two top priorities. I don't think we need anything crazy. I know Poch was talking about a midfielder. I think that's a little bit of nonsense. I think there's plenty of midfielders on the team. Do I think our midfield is completely balanced? No. If Paulinho is actually available at a fair price, do I take Paulinho for a couple of years?
Oh, yeah.
Probably.
Oh, yeah.
That was the one thing that I saw that I was like, okay, that brings the balance that I would like.
It gives me Matic Conte vibes 2.0.
A midfield three of Matic Conte versus Fabregas. That's like in my head what I was thinking. Like, okay, then our midfield is truly fully balanced at this point because you'll have the guy screening the back line, the guy that's just covering every other ounce of space in midfield, and then the guy that's going to be every creative outlet. So
it won't help our yellow card situation, but it'll definitely help our physicality. It'll solidify that midfield, man. I mean, and maybe not Paulinho. Maybe he's not the answer, but like if we do go after a midfielder, I'm in agreement with you. Like, I think, you know, Enzo needs to be freed in the sense that we need to take some of that defensive responsibility off of his hands. And I also think it's unfair to demand that Caicedo cover every blade of grass like Prime Conte did, because I went on that rant a couple pods ago. He's not Prime Conte, no matter how much we want him to be, even though he's a very good player. Maybe a Matic
deteriorate at that rate either.
Exactly. And maybe that, and who knows, guys, maybe that lengthens Thiago Silva's effectiveness in this side. Like, maybe that masks the lack of pace by having an extra man in the midfield who you know is going to stay in front of him and sort of keep our shape. But I think that's a conversation for another day. I do definitely want to get into the whole potential transfer window signings as the window comes closer, because it is only mid-month in December here. So that's pretty much a wrap on the Sheffield United match. I know we got Newcastle coming in on Tuesday. I'm going to be out of town for that one. I'm going to do my very best to try and watch it. But just really quickly here, what do we expect to see on Tuesday against Newcastle? Is this a match that we're actually, I'm never going to say we're hopeful to win in the near future, but is this the type of match that we just kind of need to go gung ho and say, fuck the Premier League at the weekend, let's play our strongest 11 and let's go for it?
Yes. I actually listened to quite the DJ Khaled song on the radio on the way home today, and Al Davis said it best. Just win, baby, win.
Yeah.
That's all it takes. That's all we need. Mm-hmm. I think there was a report saying, like, Chelsea's still hopeful to get the European route, the back route. This is a quarterfinal, right? Like, this is our way to do something with our season, is you have to beat Newcastle. And after that, I think, I don't want to say it's like an easy path, but you wouldn't have to face a Premier League side that's technically better than you until the finals. Mm-hmm. Which would be Liverpool, potentially.
Yeah, I'm sticking to my philosophy of every trophy is a meaningful trophy. So, you know, if it's there and it's up for grabs, you do everything you can to get it. And then worry about, you know, the next game after the final whistle's blown. But yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it. Andres, you want to add anything before we kind of wrap this one up?
This is the first time we have back-to-back wins at Stamford Bridge since 2021.
Yeah, I think it was October. Was it 21 or 22?
I thought I saw 21. Back-to-back Premier League victories at the Bridge.
Jesus, that's good lord.
Yeah.
Ugh, so, all right, well.
Wild stuff.
Yeah. I mean, it just means we're not as shit as we used to be 2 years ago or a year ago, whatever it was. But yeah, I mean, that wraps up this episode. So if you guys are still listening, make sure you're following us on Twitter at Blues on Parade. We do post a questions tweet after every match, so make sure you're engaging with us, asking us the questions, mentioning the comments that you want about the game, and you'll be featured on our podcast. So big shout out Trail Wolf, Ron, Human Capital Department. Thanks for sending your questions in. Some pretty good content came out of that, so much appreciated. And until next week, it will be Sam and Andres, because I'll actually be out of here. But let's keep the blue flag flying high.